Hello and welcome back to another episode of Long Story Short, the podcast about storytelling and connection. I'm your host, Jeff Serkin. On this show, we talk to people making a difference as marketers, entrepreneurs, and social impact advocates. We dig into actionable strategies and tactics to help you connect with your audience and keep your finger on the pulse of your market. My guest this week is Ryan Paul Gibson. He is the founder and CEO of Content Lift, where he helps marketers do customer research. In his career, he has interviewed over 1,600 people and has accrued 20 years of marketing miles. Ryan even took a small detour in his career working for CBC as a TV and radio reporter and has produced short films and documentaries. Ryan and I do very similar work, and we went deep into customer research. We talked about when to do it, common signs that your organization is in need of research, and how it can tangibly impact your business's growth. And of course, we dug into tactics that you can use today to get started. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Ryan Paul Gibson. Hi, Ryan. Thanks for coming on Long Story Short.
Thank you for having me.
So the theme today is all about customer research. And so I'd love to start. Can you tell us what your world looks like today at Content Lift?
So I focus on one aspect of research, and there's a lot. And maybe to start, like there's different parts of a business that you can research and different methodologies you can use to research those parts of the business. Where I focus is primary customer research is what they would call it, which is really just a lot of interacting directly with a buyer or a customer. And I do it only solely through one-on-one customer interviews. There's different ways of doing it, right? Observational, focus groups, one like surveys, you can do live surveys, and I just do one-on-one interviews. That's what I do. I hope that would answer the question, but that's
totally,
that's my days. Like I just speak to buyers all day about how and why they buy.
Yeah. So I think, and that's great. And that's great perspective. And you're right. I mean, you know, we do more quantitative research and more of the survey work, but it's a great point that I think I get, kind of get caught where it's kind of like, it's not one and the same, right? Like there, to your point, there's sort of different goals. But one thing I think is really interesting, and you and I focus kind of in the same general area around marketing and things like that. And I'm kind of curious, kind of from a big picture perspective, what are some of the common threads you see? What are the challenges that organizations are in when they're in need of customer research? When they're coming to you or when you're starting a project, what are some of the challenges they're trying to solve for?
Yeah. It's funny, I was just mentioning this today because that's actually one that comes up quite a bit. And I find it sort of falls into a few buckets.
Okay.
Let's just say there's four of them. The first one is they've never done it before and they have no idea how to get started, which is, you know, common for a lot of B2B companies.
Oh, totally.
And I think a lot of marketers who are really savvy may be even surprised at how prevalent that is, right? So that's the first one. The second one is they've done it before and they didn't get anything out of it. So, and either that was because the research wasn't done well, they didn't know how to, you know, because they didn't know how to do it properly, there wasn't a lot of rigor around it, or they didn't know how to use it.
Right.
Which is a big one I find now. Whereas, there's a lot of people who do research for, say, marketing and sales functions, but they drop off the report like any consultant would for anything, and then they ride off into the sunset. And it could be really great insights.
Yeah.
But now what?
Right.
So they struggle with that. The third one is they actually have someone that does it. They're okay at it. And they need some help. So often it's either fish for me or teach me how to fish.
Yeah.
Those are sort of the buckets I see. And then actually what I find is once it gets to a certain threshold, I don't know what your experience is, but I find once it gets to about a 400, 500 headcount, research is now a thing legit inside a company in whatever capacity that is, right?
Yep.
Maybe not be everything that you and I would do and other researchers, but there is some type of research function.
Yeah. Right?
So that's usually how I see it all play out. So the challenges though, are the three other ones that I saw.
And I think that makes a ton of sense. And so I want to take a step kind of even higher than that and to say, what are some of the organizational challenges? What are some of the sticking points within the organization that would lead somebody to say, we need research, right? Like what are some of the things that they're like from a business perspective that they're saying, you know what, we're struggling with X or Y. You know, what are some of the common things? And we'll get into, you know, sort of the value of it and what it can really help do. But, you know, what is it that would make somebody say to themselves, hey, you know what, I think research would be really beneficial for us?
Yeah, there's a lot. When I first talk with people, a lot of times it's because they are just starting and they're not really sure how they want to get into a market and win in a market. For marketing
reasons. Yeah, right.
And even sales, right? To some extent. But I think some of the issues some of the challenges I hear are they aren't necessarily sure about who their best customer is.
Yes.
And why they're buying. So they maybe want some clarity around that. Because maybe they've had a few different pockets of a prospective buyer, but they're not sure who to lean into. They're not sure how to maybe influence the buying journey earlier on. A lot of it is very performance marketing based, or, you know, very much at a sales motion level. And they want to know how they can influence things further upfield. Maybe they've been doing a lot of marketing. It's not landing.
Yeah.
That's a big one. So they're just doing a bunch of stuff. Nothing is landing, right? And the forecasts for either revenue or pipeline are not where they anticipate them or where they want them to be. Well, why? Politics is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
People fight over who they should be selling to, who the customer should be. I've been in those conversations as a marketing leader.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the sales and marketing is not aligned.
Right.
Right. So there's all these things. Those are all various reasons. And I just did one recently. It's on my website at contentlift.io with the SaaS company. They had an acquisition.
Right.
And it wasn't tracking. And they couldn't figure out why, because they already had a sales and marketing engine. So the theory should be, we just bought a thing. It's like other things. Let's plug it into the machine and here comes the money. Well, then, well, why not? So, you know, there's all these reasons. I usually tell people, if you're not sure, just look at your annual operating plan.
Yep.
And if you aren't where you thought you would be after a few quarters, you probably need to understand why.
I think that's great perspective. The things that I would say, which are very similar to a few that you mentioned, is, you know, the one that we see a lot is that growth has leveled off. So it's, you know, companies that kind of came out of the gate really strong. They had this growth and then it kind of tapered off and no one's really sure why. You know, they had gotten all excited internally and kept saying, oh, well, we doubled last year, we should do it again. And, you know, kind of about the same in the next year. Well, we can double again, you know, and it's, and so it's the growth has leveled off. And I think the biggest thing that we hear even within that is, especially now, right, like in this crazy overcrowded digital world, but the content just isn't resonating. Things aren't landing. But I think the biggest thing that you really touched on is really that uncertainty from a marketing perspective of, it's not even just that, oh, growth has leveled off. It's that we're not sure what works anymore, right? We're not sure how to actually get the attention of our market and we don't know how to drive demand. And you know, so a lot of these things that we see, you know, we fully believe that not understanding your ideal customers is really the root of all of that problem.
Yeah. I would even go further now where I start to talk about resourcing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, how do you know who should be on your team?
Yeah.
Right. Again, like there's only so much money to go around in a budget for any of the disciplines in a business. It doesn't matter if it's marketing. There's only so much time and budget, and you have to compete.
Yeah.
Right. So how do you know where to strategically place your bets?
Yeah.
And if you're not trying to understand that with research, it's going to be much harder to figure out where to place the bets.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. And you know, our perspective is that there's essentially somewhat of a bullseye. And so what that means is the more in detail that you actually know your ideal customer, the more effective your messaging, your positioning, you know, it will affect everything within the organization. But there really is, you know, you have to get super, super close. And then there's a lot of organizations too. And we actually found this with one client where they had two main personas that they were selling to throughout the buying cycle. And what happened was they kind of had this one umbrella message that kind of wasn't resonating with either of them.
Yeah.
Right. And so what the research really helped them uncover was the fact that
there are very specific needs that each of those different personas needs to hear that are different. Yeah. And, you know, frankly, so what they realized is that their message wasn't really resonating with anybody. And so now that they can now kind of go back to the workshop a little bit and say, now we know each of these two personas, these segments really, really well. And then they developed differentiated messaging. But that was the kind of thing that you wouldn't have uncovered without actually doing real research, right? To know that, actually there's two very, and they have very different needs. So saying the one thing to both of them is not going to work.
Yeah. You might get there.
Right, right.
But like, how much runway do you have and how much time? Yep. Especially if you're like a VC-backed company where the pressure is like so intense.
Yep.
So yeah, like you don't have the time to try and figure it out.
No,
like, it's sort of ad hoc. Right.
That's it. I mean, I think, you know, to your point, obviously, you know, sort of VC private equity kind of creates that environment. But, you know, even now, I mean, it's just the pressure on marketers. And you kind of said this up at the top, just to keep delivering. Right. And frankly, today, especially that it's, you know, you and I have both been doing this long enough that I remember back in the day when lead volume was the game. Right. OK. Oh, we just need, you know, 1,000 MQLs and whatever. Yeah. And then you get there and now you see, well, we get there, but only we had such a low conversion rate that they're not converting the revenue, right? Yeah. And so now it's, no, lead volume is not the problem, right? Like these days, there's almost too many ways that you can get names in your database.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily going to move the needle. And if marketers are not impacting revenue, then again, it's sort of the pressure just keeps building.
Yeah, you can buy a list now pretty easily.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But is that going to be the way?
Yeah. Yeah. And the answer is almost never. Almost never.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about, you know, in terms of how your work, how you've seen it impact organizations specifically, you know, like what would you say are some of the key, you know, benefits that you typically drive towards in terms of the use case for how they can most effectively leverage your research?
Yeah. It often depends on what the objective is,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm sure you probably deal with that too. It's for me, that sets the tone and the stage of what you eventually do. Cause I still focus on buyer journey discovery mm-hmm. and sort of job, lean into jobs to be done type stuff. But it can vary based on what you want to understand. That said, you know, I think it's most basic. We influence sort of messaging, positioning, and you know, how you need to talk about your product so that mm-hmm. the prospective buyers or ideal buyer see themselves in your marketing, which is a common thing that we marketers talk about forever, right? You know, you want to have that reflection in your marketing. Well, now if the customers are using their own words to talk about why and how they bought, which they often call voice of the customer work, then that's a great way to figure out that part of it. It also helps with understanding, like, what are the actual triggers that are causing them to seek a solution out in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily mean that part just before they talk to sales. I try to start as early as possible in a buying journey around, you know, walk me through what was happening even before you started looking. Like, why was this a problem in the first place? Right? Like, why does this even exist? Because if you can understand that part of it and then systematically figure out how every choice they made and every action they took to finally get to your product over all the things they could have done, you will now understand how you can influence that decision process much earlier on. And especially in even if it's product led, right? You understand, okay, these are all the things that are happening on average for them to think about buying our solution.
Mm-hmm.
So how can I impact each of those stages? That's such a, if you can have that, that totally changes the game for marketing, right? Because then mm-hmm. you know where, you know, like communities you can be in, you know, types of content you need to help influence those different points, things they're struggling with on the way to your product, right? So I try to, that is a big one that I think comes out of it. And then even things like, you know, new service, new product lines, features, if it's a service company, like new services that you can provide. There's all different ways that it's going to influence the business, right? So that would be sort of like, and then you can help identify like what attributes of your customer make sense, right?
One of the things you mentioned that's so critical is you mentioned that it's helping to uncover what happened before somebody got in touch with sales, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is the piece that a lot of organizations miss, is that, you know, when we think about it, and I think we've all seen some version of the stat that, you know, a potential buyer is 65-70% of the way through their buyer's journey before they get in
touch
with
you. It's higher now.
Right. Well, exactly. Right. And that's going to keep going up. And especially now with all of the information that's freely available online and product-led growth, and, you know, that number is going to keep going up. Right. But part of it is that organizations then see what data they have, which is typically in their CRM, which only starts from the time that buyer sort of raises their hand and gets in touch with them. But that's not when the need began. Right. Like, to me, and I think you just hit the nail on the head. To me, the most important point is, what was it that actually triggered them to recognize that they had the need and that they're interested in searching for a solution? At this point, they're already raising their hand. But if you want to impact your marketing, if you want to influence how you actually grow real demand, it's that you need to understand what those buying triggers are, what the things are that are helping people recognize that they have a problem, because they're happening before they get in touch with you, right? Yeah. So recognize that everything in your CRM is after somebody's realized they've had a problem, and as they're in the process of saying, well, what's the best solution that can help me?
And then the challenge is, like, that's just good to know.
Yeah.
It's important to know. But that's not what marketing typically is.
That's right.
It lands there eventually, because sales needs help.
Right.
You know, they want to have someone that's a very well-informed in buyer when they get into that sales motion, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it doesn't start there. And
that's right.
People don't wake up and want to buy a thing typically for a complex product, right?
Right.
Especially in B2B. Mm-hmm. Even for some of the lower average contract value products, that's not usually not, a 3-day turnaround.
Right.
Or what happened was they felt the pain for a while and they just happened to find the thing. Now was just so acute that they got them at the right time.
Yep.
I've talked to buyers who've been problem aware and solution aware for years.
Yep.
And the common logic is, well, if I show them the pain and how I solve it, they should buy it.
Right. Right.
There's a lot of reasons they don't buy right away, sometimes years. So you need to figure out why.
Yeah.
Like, what's happening in that 3 year, say it's like a year. What's happening in that year?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I not a priority?
Yeah. That's such a great point. And again, I think some of this is the fact that we as marketers want to feel that we have some control, some sense of control. And we frankly, I think part of it kind of goes to the way we do reporting on it and we visualize it, which is this linear funnel, right?
Yeah.
As if that there is some sort of process that somebody is just going about these steps. And so all you need to do is sort of put the next step in front of them. And to your point, you know, they may go through steps 1 through 3 within the first 2 or 3 days of becoming problem aware, and then maybe sit on it for a year, right? And that's that's kind of the point where it's, no, the reality is this is so much. And to me, I always come back to the fact that that's why they call it the buyer's journey. It's their journey. And, you know, we as marketers are here to be able to support in any way that we can.
Yeah.
But for us to think that we have ultimate control over that process. And one of the things I think a lot about is, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, we used to refer to it more as the sales cycle. And now I think we've all collectively come to call it the buyer's journey. And I think that's, it's a really small thing in terms of terminology, but I think it speaks volumes in terms of where the control lies, right? The idea that, and I'd argue that 10, 15 years ago, you had to go through a sales rep to learn a lot of the information about the product, about the solution. And I think that's part of what it was, right? So you held the key to everything. There really weren't the opportunities today between communities and review sites. And, you know, there weren't all these other places to go for credible information. So as a result, you essentially just had to raise your hand, kind of go through the vendors and see what it was all about. But I think that control has just purely shifted now. And we just all need to come to realize it is the buyer's journey, whether we like it or not.
I was that buyer.
Yeah, there you go.
When I started in B2B,
mm-hmm.
I was actually in the operations side.
Mm-hmm.
Of things. I actually started for a franchise chain and I sold franchises to like bakery coffee shop franchises. Yep. So it's actually selling businesses to entrepreneurs, right. Which is such a
very meta thing.
Yeah, absolutely. But to your what you just said, like we were small and scrappy. I'm up in Canada, and we were a medium sized chain, which was about 120 units. Mm-hmm. That's like in the United States, that's like maybe one chain in one state, right? Right. Like, so we were small and scrappy for, you know, the context of Canada. But I had to rely on the vendors for all my data and information. That was actually where I really started my research journey, because if I needed data like you provide in the quantitative side, I actually had to, my vendors would like casually take it from their own decks and like stuff they paid for and slip it to me via email. And like, oh, yep. thank goodness, because it was so expensive. It was like tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars, because these were massive research firms. Whereas, and then the qualitative side, I did it myself. I would go to the stores, start talking to the customers. I would go into the stores of competitors, pretend I was a customer, and start casually chatting up their own customers and ask them why they bought there, which people thought I was out of my mind. But I needed to understand why they were choosing them over us. And that actually gave me some insights on where we were better.
Mm-hmm.
But I say that because I had to rely on the vendor.
Yeah.
And they were really good at it. And the ones who would give me those things, guess who had my business like over and over again? And I would renew with them. Sometimes the price wasn't an issue. It was what I got in addition to what I needed to get done. Nowadays, I don't need them for that stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And although I still might choose a vendor that has a good relationship and gives me additional value, that's still a reality.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's less of that now.
Yeah.
Especially in the digital world.
That's such a great point. And one thing I just want to, you know, come back to from my perspective, and the thing I get really excited about, and you kind of talked about this, you brought up sort of the politics within the organization, you know, from our perspective, when we see organizations after the fact, right, after we've worked with them, it's really that buyer insight really becomes the foundation. And so we've typically, at the beginning of our projects, we bring in stakeholders from across marketing, sales, product, customer success, support, the executives. And so to your point, it really does help solve some of that political debate. Our whole perspective is, listen, we're not here to tell you who's right or wrong. We're going to take all of these as hypotheses and we're going to let your buyers tell us.
Exactly.
Right. And then when you do this effectively, that research itself becomes cornerstone content. It helps you enable your sales teams more effectively. And you know, kind of as we talked about a little earlier, it enables you to align your positioning and messaging to each individual audience segment and persona. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, when you recognize that there is more than one. And the trick is here, and I've seen this over and over, is that when you nail the positioning and when you nail and you can create relevant content and messaging, it flips a switch and it creates really this rising tide of new demand. And that, from our perspective, is really how you get that, you know, coming back again. And then all of a sudden prospects are coming to you instead of you chasing them down. And, you know, it's been such a powerful experience for us, because understanding your ideal customers really becomes, if you solve that, it becomes the thing that solves all of those other problems, right? You now know what content to create, you know what products to develop, you know what matters most to them, you know why they're choosing their competitors or you, or, you know, and you understand better what parts of your unique selling proposition resonate best. And yeah, so, you know, obviously I think we're both biased here, but I think what research can enable organizations to do is really, really powerful.
Yeah, I you're not going to get an argument from me there.
So I'm curious then, you know, you and I have both been doing this a long time. Like, how have you seen, you know, marketers and business leaders, how have you seen their perspective on wanting to do research, or even understanding that research is a problem or a solution potentially to some of their problems? How have you seen that change over time?
Interesting. It hasn't and hasn't.
Yeah.
So the last 10 years of my career, I've worked mostly with early stage, like Series B, let's call it.
Mm-hmm.
Just to sort of, you know, draw a line somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think when I first started working with them, there wasn't a ton of that mindset.
Right.
there was around the initial ideation of a business idea still. Mm-hmm. So some people might be familiar with the like Steve Blank and the Lean Canvas model, or the customer discovery, which is almost like that's a lot of what they teach in the incubators. Jobs Be Done is starting to replace a bit of that now, I find. But if you start there, it's all about sort of validating, is this something someone's going to give me money for?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. And they would do a pretty decent job there.
Mm-hmm.
But then once they got into an environment where they had to build sales and marketing functions, that's where it often fell apart. Right. And most early stage companies, the founders will be the first salesperson more often than not. And they typically do a good job because they're a subject matter expert. They're typically a technical founder. They can talk the talk and walk the walk and all that stuff. But then when they need to sort of start building acumen into influencing a market, again, they struggle because what they think is what I've done now with, say, some early adopters is now going to translate to the larger part of the market.
Mm-hmm.
What I find now, though, or I should say quantitative, I think, in your side has always been stronger.
Right.
I think when, you know, all the tech came in, you definitely got more quantitative data, which even I would have loved.
Yeah.
Back in my day. You know, like what a godsend. And then I think we over-indexed into it, thinking it would be gospel. And then people who grew up with those things didn't understand there's other ways to look at research. I think the pendulum is swinging back around now. And I say that anecdotally, but also it just seems to be more discussions around how can you build a more holistic approach to how you're researching the customer. So I think marketers now, it goes back to what I said at the beginning, in those sort of scenarios where I find more people realize they need to do it. One of the challenges, though, is they either, in your case, probably they're just data overwhelmed and they don't know how to parse it into something that tells a narrative about actions they should take. Or for me, they think often it's just opening up, you know, a video call like this and just talking.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get to a sense of like what the insight should be. Well, in some ways, yes. But for me, qualitative data is, you know, there's still rigor around it and a process you need to have to get what you need to drive insights that then marry with what you do, which is the quantitative side, right? And they all sort of blend together. And then you're like, you start there. There's more embracing of it, but it's still a big gap.
I couldn't agree more. And but I will say, from my perspective, and especially this is probably true with more with larger organizations, more established organizations, is quantitative research used to be seen as sort of like a nice to have, or frankly, it almost became a necessary thing. But it was almost like where it was relegated to within the organization was sort of like it was not necessarily, you know, sort of fundamental to sales and marketing, right? It lived in some sort of research organization or maybe in product. And it was sort of for very specific purposes, but it wasn't really seen. And so to me, it's been, you know, and to me, this has been one of the exciting things that as the buyer's journey has shifted so much more digitally, and we're all kind of coming to realize that, especially with these overcrowded channels, and how are you going to break through the noise? And so there really has been a groundswell from my perspective of leaders saying, really, the only way, you know, kind of echoing our messages, right? The only way is to understand your customer, period, right? That's the only way to break through the noise. That's the only way, especially now that, you know, it used to be, again, back to control, right? It used to be that they had to go through you to get information, and now they don't. So now you need to, you know, you need to be able to get their attention, right? That's become the much harder thing. And so I think some of the things that research helps most have really just become more forefront. So I've certainly seen the narrative change around business leaders and especially marketers saying this is something we need.
It's still a gap, though.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't agree more. Right.
And, you know, when I was doing my own due diligence around Content Lift, I actually spoke to some agencies and like, you know, that had been around for a while and some other researchers. And I don't know if this has been your experience, but it's historically been the hardest part to get people to invest in. They all like the commodity side of marketing, people seem to understand, right?
Yeah.
It's very binary.
Yep.
You know, and they can sort of understand, okay, I want a blog. Mm-hmm. I need SEO.
Yep.
Give me some ads. Need a right. website, right? right? This part of it seems to be a struggle for people, I think, overall. But yeah, I can feel the winds shifting. And
yeah,
I think other researchers that probably you and I both follow on social media are seem to sense the same shift.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, I have conversations about this all the time. Marketers are really, just to your point, what's happened is marketing has gotten more complex with all of the different channels and all of the different specialties. Yeah, and no you have kidding. To, especially in larger organizations, we have to do all of them, right? Mm-hmm. And part of the issue is, well, marketers are saying, well, we're not hitting our, you know, to your point, the model's not working out, right? We got our 1,000 MQLs, but it's not driving the revenue we need. So we need more. And so then what happens is, well, we can't stop the plane, right? The plane is in motion. And if we turn anything off, if we take a step back, we're sort of at risk of going even lower than we are. So we can't do that, right? So we have to keep doing everything all the time. But yet somehow, and again, this is why I always say, like, you know, research becomes the one thing that unlocks all of the others, right? So if you actually, and again, I don't even want to say pause, you know, partially this is why either if you have an internal organization or if you have additional bandwidth, or if you bring in, you know, third party organizations like either of ours, that it enables you to do this while you're not stopping the plane from flying, but it makes everything you do better. There was a company I remember from when I was growing up. I don't even know if it's still around anymore. And I remember their commercials. It's called BASF. And so their commercials was, you know, we don't make a lot of the things you buy. We make a lot of the things you buy better. And that's sort of the thing, right? Like research is the common thread that will make it will make your ads better. It will make your right. But I think to your point, I think we've over relied on distribution, and what we've gotten to a place of is marketers blaming the channel to some extent. So, oh, we must not be resonating because we're not on TikTok or because we're, you know, not doing this effectively. And I think so much of it is, no, I think I would say at a baseline level, it, you know, you're not going to find a 5 or 10x lift by going into a new channel. More than likely, it's more often than not, it's just that your content isn't resonating, right? It's
that they're not relevant.
Yeah, that's it. But that's the piece that they never really stopped to question. And I think that's hopefully where, and I think that's still where the gap lives today, to your point.
And I think they don't.
They don't know what they don't know. And I think that's, you know, we're starting to come around on that. And I'm excited, you know, hopefully over the next couple of years is that even kind of continues to flourish.
They just don't understand how to even be relevant.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, it's the context, like you have to have the context of why you exist in the first place.
Yep.
And I actually think they don't need to do everything. I'm going to be a little different there.
Sure.
I think, especially again, but that's probably a function of who I work with, right? When you're early stages to like a Series A, you can't do everything.
Right.
So you have to be very specific about what you're going to do and why.
Mm-hmm.
So what I find is they almost start to do everything because they think one thing's not working.
Yeah.
So like it's sort of similar to what you just said. Let's might as well go into TikTok now.
Yep.
Well, maybe.
Right.
But what are you going to say there?
Right.
And why? And how do you know that's the thing you should say?
Yes.
That's the part where they fall down, because then it's just they fall back on the standard promote the product, or, you know, hey, look, we hired another person to work for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's the stuff you see. But the reality is that might have worked even a few years ago. But if you look at social, the context of social now is that's how people consume most information.
Yes.
They stay within platform. They're still using Google, but not as much.
Right.
Right. And you're getting exposed to things in a passive way. You know, it's not an high intent thing until I see something that resonates, and then I might follow you on social.
Yep.
And then I'll start noticing your stuff for a bit. And you know what? Jeff really knows what he's talking about here. I should go visit his website, see if there's anything good. That's how that stuff works.
That's it.
But to get their attention, what in the world are you going to talk about? Because if you just talk about your product, no one's going to care.
Unless
you hit them at that exact moment where that pain is like
yep.
right ready, and they're ready to, oh, that's the thing I need. Mm-hmm. But the odds of that are so low.
Yeah, I mean, the way I think about it is, listen, they're on this journey, right? They're on this quest to solve a particular problem for them. And if you're out there talking about you, that's, they're saying no thanks, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So again, start with them, right? What they want to hear a story about them. So yeah, that's why, again, if you start with the pain point that you do help solve for them, at least you're at least giving yourself a much better chance, to your point, right? But if you're saying, we added this new feature, we hired this new person, again, they're just going to ignore it, and not intentionally, right? They're just, their brain saying, nah, not for me, right? Like, you're exactly, that's nice that you're patting yourself on the back over there, but that's not, you know, I'm not sure how that's going to help me.
Exactly.
So I'd love to get your perspective on, you know, obviously you and I do, you know, some form of larger scale projects and things like mm-hmm. that. But I think one thing that would be really beneficial is, what are some ways that marketers and people within inside organizations, what are some ways that they could get started kind of tapping into some of this, you know, now, right? What are some of the things they could be doing inside their own organizations?
Yeah, because I'll be frank with people. If you have a culture that is not embracing this, it's going to be a tough sell in the beginning. Yep. Mm-hmm. Because you have to think of it as, you'll say to your, whoever you report to, I want to spend the next few weeks talking to customers and not do the other things you've just asked me to do for the next quarter or two quarters.
Yep.
It's always not an easy sell for a culture that hasn't done this work.
Yep.
So that's, but what you can do is some small things to build towards it, like anything else. Mm-hmm. So what can you do? The first one is always, I was always a big fan when I worked, when I was working in various organizations, work across the company.
Mm-hmm.
So go talk to sales, customer success, the product team, you know, book weekly chats, sit on some meetings, jump on sales calls, or listen to pre-recorded ones. That's a really good first step.
Yeah.
Because even though it only covers that part we discussed, which is like where their intent is the highest and they're looking to mm-hmm. purchase, you'll start to get a sense of things. And you, what I always tell people about this work is, a salesperson might help you become better at marketing through a conversation, but they won't think necessarily like a marketer.
Yes.
You know, you are the one that, you know, writes content for X or puts ads together here, and you'll start to filter those answers through those things that you're trying to do,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. So it's like you will start to latch onto things that the sales team won't necessarily know to pick up on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first step. Then look outside the company. So go to communities where your prospective buyers hang out. You know, go into things like Quora. Reddit is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Reddit is where I always tell people, you can read the reviews for something on G2 or Trustpilot, and then go to Reddit for the real reviews.
I love that.
Because people are very honest on Reddit, right, in that community. So find how people are talking about problems that you might be in the universe of solving, right? And just follow people on social media that, you know, are your prospective buyer. What are they talking about? What do they care about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are some really easy ways to sort of get some quick wins in research, right? Because what you and I do is our deep dives,
right?
But you don't always have that luxury. So that's a way to really build some valuable intel quickly.
Yeah, and I just want to echo some of those. So I mean, certainly listening to sales calls is the first thing I recommend, again, whether pre-recorded or not. And ultimately, what I think you want to be listening for is, what are the pain points? What are they struggling with? And slightly deeper than that, listen for the language, right? Like, what are they, how are they describing the problem? Because so often it comes down to language and phrasing, and the fact the way we as marketers talk about things is not the way our buyers think about them.
And let me give you an example of that, if I may.
Yeah, please, please.
So I work a lot with a company called Rewind, mm-hmm. and they do SaaS backups.
Mm-hmm.
They got their first sort of home run in Shopify's app store.
Right.
As a backup a backup software tool for Shopify stores.
Mm-hmm.
What was so fascinating was Rewind, you look at their H1 at the time.
Yeah.
You know, backups for your store.
Right.
Or, you know, backups for your data. Back up your data. When I would go and talk to the e-commerce merchants, they never said the word data once.
Yep.
Ever. Right. They would say things like SKUs, product listings, you know, my store or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yes, you have a sense of what your product might be. They might use totally different language to talk about it.
Well, and I think people don't recognize that, again, even if they're synonyms, right? Even if you think you're saying the same thing, they're not seeing it that way, right? And no, so it's so critical. And that's why, again, we fundamentally do mostly quantitative, but this is, to me, the value of qualitative and, you know, the perfect world is a combination, right? And so getting the language very specifically really only comes out of the qualitative. So listen to the sales calls. The other thing, again, is similarly, if you have a customer success organization, talk to customers if you're able to, and not just any customers, talk to your best customers. And here's why. So if you want to listen to the pain points of people that are potentially buying, you want to listen to what people have found. So your best customers, the ones that pay on time, don't ask for discounts, you know, that sort of seem to love you, right? They'd write a testimonial anytime you'd ask. Those are the people that have clearly found something. They found a great benefit of your solution. Ask them to describe what it's meant for them, right? Like, what's the problem it solved for them? What has it allowed them to do? Because a lot of times the benefit that they've stumbled into is sort of like a black box, right? They've found this magic that you're probably not leading your marketing messaging with, right? It's something where, to your point, you know, with Rewind, like, some people may have said, oh, it allows me to back up my store and all, you know, it's like, oh, wait a second, right? Like, we're not saying that, you know? So like, it allows you to uncover sort of what are the benefits that people, real users, and the people that really, really like what you do have found. And so how do you then take that black box and package it up for everybody?
Exactly.
And the other one, again, I couldn't agree more, is communities. And so this is one that I would say, it does not mean start your own community. You can if you have the scale.
So tough to do that, though.
No, right. And frankly, I'd even argue, especially early on, it's less about even participating and more just to see what the conversation is, right?
It's observational work.
That's it. Right? What are people saying?
I used to do it when I was a researcher, when I started researching in the stores, right? I just watched people in the queue.
Yep.
It's almost the same mindset. What are they doing out in this world where it's all the same people who share same functions and same responsibilities talking about?
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a podcast episode, you know, a couple months ago, and Camille Trent, who's wonderful. She used a term I really liked. She called it method marketing, where it's, you know, if you don't sell to marketers, right? If you are not part of your own ideal customer profile, which is 95% of marketers, then you need to essentially go to where your buyers are. You need to essentially try on and sort of act as your buyer.
Find the
water coolers, the digital water coolers they're hanging out at. What's the conversation like? What competitors are they comparing? How are they discussing, you know, what things are really driving them? You know, we may think, to your point, you mentioned price earlier. You may think internally, oh, it's all about price and this and that. And if you go to these communities, you probably won't see price mentioned at all, right? It just really helps you understand that if you want to better understand that buyer, then go inhabit their world.
Yeah. And I would caution marketers, if it's not their domain, don't engage for
that. That's it. Yeah.
Because you actually might say the wrong thing.
Yes.
And look the fool.
Yeah.
But it's going to be more, I think, more prevalent because, you know, the idea of having a subject matter in house, which is probably similar to what like a sales engineer would have been, or something to that effect, right? Where you have if it's a high intent conversation, you have someone that has like the subject matter expertise come in and talk about the product, right? To add validity. That's probably going to happen more in the market before a journey. The challenge is those people are going to be harder and harder to find. Especially for early stage companies. You need to find ways where you can understand what's happening out of that environment.
Yep.
Right. And like, what are the trends and patterns you see? Just don't always engage if you don't know the answer.
No, right. And again, it's that's not, you're not there so that you can leave a product pitch or something like that.
Yeah,
right.
No,
to your point.
No.
Right. Yeah. You're there to observe. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
So, okay. So are you ready for a couple of not so rapid fire questions?
I guess so. I'm so bad at these, but I will do my best.
Well, if you're listening, it means we didn't cut that out. So, so let's start with, what would you say is the most overrated marketing activity?
I'm going to say cold email, mm-hmm. but I think there is no overrated activity. And this is why I'll say that. I think anything can work.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to understand how to use it. Like, I even think cold outreach can work.
Right.
The problem is we just take a shotgun approach to it. I think skywriting can work.
Yeah.
But, you know, you need to understand, like, how can I use it and why?
Right.
So, but I think we over rely on that. And I think about this a lot because if you read, I've never seen someone produce a case study around cold email where they show me revenue. They talk a lot about booking meetings.
Yeah, meetings, right.
And the percentages, though, this mm-hmm. I think this would be an interesting study. Maybe you should tackle this.
Mm-hmm.
The percentages of meetings booked seem to align around the percentage of a market that's ready to buy.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So I always caution people about cold email, but caveat, it could work if you actually know what to talk about in that environment.
Yeah, and the thing I want to just expand on a little bit there, which I think you touched on really well, is the fact that earlier we were talking about marketers, especially larger companies that are doing everything. But yeah. I think what happens is they do the one thing and then they just plaster it across channels. And I think to your point, no, you need to be very mindful of how to most effectively do that thing, right? So your point, it isn't that cold email works or doesn't work, right? It's that you need to know how to use it most effectively.
Absolutely.
And, you know, even for a lot of us that are, personal brand wise are on LinkedIn and Twitter, it's not necessarily one and the same, right? And so a lot of people will just take their content from one and copy it over to the other. And most will find that that doesn't work either, right? So it's sort of the same thing, is understanding that there is a real nuance and there's a real skill to each of those tactics. And so just be mindful of, you know, which you're using. Are you doing it in an effective way?
Yeah. Okay.
So then let's spin it on the positive side. What would you say is the most underrated marketing activity that the marketer should be doing more of?
Yeah. To me, it's a toss up of the community stuff we talked about and organic social, but I'm going to say organic social for B2B.
Yep.
Because I still don't see enough people using it in a way that makes sense for how a business probably should use it.
Yes.
And what I already touched on a little bit, right?
Yep.
Where people now will stay in a platform and they won't leave it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just looking for sort of interesting things that are relevant to them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can switch your mindset around that sort of self-promotional to a cadence of providing, like if you just took all the 10,000 blogs that most companies have and,
course.
It's just sitting there on a website, there wasn't a lot of maybe search intent behind it.
Right.
And truncated those and put them just on LinkedIn one a day or the course of a full year, I think you'd be very surprised. Just do it for a month.
Yeah.
You'd be very surprised about the uptick you'd get in engagement.
Because I think to your point, it's using it in a way that you're focused on how can you help your buyers, right? And not necessarily, and I promise if you help your buyers, it will result in sales, right?
Oh,
But the point is, I don't think you need to go in with the explicit intent of I'm going to go pitch my product there, right?
Yeah.
So it's more, how can I help my buyers? And I think the other thing that you touched on is, people buy from people, right? So that leveraging people within your organization to actually be those thought leaders, because when you see a company saying something versus when you see a person saying it, it just resonates differently.
Well, think about the example I gave, right? When I was the buyer, so they'd send me all the market data, right? And I would even get things from sales account executives. Hey, I was I saw this article, thought of you.
Yep.
This is just a natural extension of that, but it's in social media.
Right.
That's it. It's not different. It's just in a different context, like a different format and environment.
Yep.
So it's just, you have to understand how to use these channels in the context of how people are systematically making decisions about something.
Yep. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
And then finally, so if you're thinking about, especially earlier in your career, what would you say is the most important skill a marketer or skills that a marketer can possess to be successful?
Oh. So early in your career, if you're going to be in B2B, learn about business.
Yep.
I know everyone talks about psychology.
Yeah, of
and
course.
Like, you know, and all that stuff's important. But you're still working in a business. How do they make money? Like, yeah. Like, how do you compete? How do you understand how to compete in a market? I sort of live in a weird, like, I find I'm a little different than a lot of the marketers. I find I'm more of like a biz dev sales person that mm-hmm. loves marketing.
Right.
And it's just the nature of who I am, maybe, but also how my career's unfolded. But I think that's a key one, right? Learn the business. And then the second one I have is, listening, active listening mm-hmm. and patience, maybe patience, but maybe it's just the ability to listen.
Yeah.
Because I think as a marketer, if you can just sit back and sort of absorb and listen, which isn't always easy because often you just want to like get things done.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to listen to either your stakeholders, your peers, your customers really helps enrich how you approach your work.
I love that. And I want to just echo the understanding business, right? It's just, I think it's, as we kind of talked about earlier, that marketing has become so specialized. But to yeah. me, what that has now led to is that there's even more benefit to understanding how all the dots connect, right? Yeah. So you may come in and, you know, be an expert in SEO or be an expert in, you know, writing Facebook ads. And that's all well and good. But understand, you know, for me, it's sort of understanding, okay, what are we actually trying to do? Who's the potential buyer? What are we trying to get them to do? And, but again, to your point, I think more generally in terms of marketing, yeah, marketing is a piece of business, but we need to think like business people that happen to be marketers. And I love that perspective.
Well, it's marketing at the end of the day, right? It's trying to influence a market.
That's exactly right.
Right. So like, it's go like, to
market strategy, right?
So. Yeah. So we forget about that part yes. sometimes. Yeah.
And then what resources, books, blogs, podcasts, is there anything, newsletters that you would recommend to our audience?
Yeah, books I'm bad at. I've never really been in the book club for business books. They're a lot of them are great. It's just mm-hmm. never really where I've gravitated. Two podcasts that mm-hmm. I usually put on quite a bit for where I am and the things that I want to yeah. focus on. One is, I like Pep Laya, mm-hmm. How to Win.
Yep.
I like Pep because he thinks similar to me, I find. He's a little controversial at times, is what I like, but I think he owns some of that. And also, he thinks about what we just talked about. How are you going to win in a market?
Right.
And strategically, and tactically. And he interviews really interesting business leaders about that. I like that. But that aligns with sort of where I like to live and breathe in marketing.
Yep.
And then the other one I like is Phil Agnew, who has a podcast called Nudge. Mm-hmm. And that is actually the psychology side of things. He used to work for Hotjar. He works for Buffer now. And his whole thing is focusing on how companies have used psychology and neuroscience in marketing, which I think is so fascinating. So I just talked about like psychology. I sort of mm-hmm. was tongue in cheek about it, but it is important. I think it just comes a little later as you get a little more experienced in marketing, because if you don't know the foundational pieces,
yes,
it's hard to apply psychology, right? So those are the two that I like. What I do say to people though, when they ask me a lot of that question, who should you listen to? I said, think about where you are now, mm-hmm. what you want to do in your career or in your business, and find people who are in similar positions. And if they have content that is helping you,
yes.
those are the people. Because it's so hard to discern sometimes when we get exposed to these, to different thought leaders, whether they're relevant for us sometimes.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I love the perspective of find somebody who's achieved what you're trying to achieve, right?
Like, yeah.
That's it. That there's no shortage. I mean, thankfully with communities like LinkedIn, especially, like there is no shortage of people that are out there sharing their story, sharing their, you know, the things they've learned. And so find somebody, to your point specifically, who has achieved, you know, again, yeah. whether it's, owning SEO, whether it's running your own business, and they've reached some sort of threshold, whatever it is, find somebody who's achieved something you want to achieve, and they're likely to be telling, sort of giving away their secret sauce.
Absolutely.
And then finally, where can people find and connect with you on social media?
Yeah, LinkedIn is where I live.
Yep.
That's it. It's such a great platform. I know some people don't like it. I think it's fantastic. And I'm very active there. I know you are as well. So people can just DM me. I'm always pretty good at responding. Or they can just hop on my website, contentlift.io, and just check out what I do. I just talked to someone today who's thinking of going into research, right?
That's awesome.
I was just giving them some thoughts.
Yep.
I talked to a lot of companies too about just how they can approach it. Similar to what you said, like how can they get started? If they can't work with me, how can they get started? Because I'm happy to help with that too.
That's great. Well, Ryan, thank you so much. This has been amazing. I feel like we could do this for hours. But
we definitely could.
for coming on, and thanks for sharing your story with us.
No, well, thank you for having me. It's been great.
I really enjoyed my conversation with Ryan. I love his perspective on the current state of marketing that signals the need for research. It's all around the uncertainty they feel, not being sure who their ideal customer is, and ultimately, not sure how to get into a market and win. If you want to learn more about the resources mentioned in the episode, you can find them in our show notes. In addition, we're publishing the full text transcripts of the episodes on our website at circanresearch.com/podcasts. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join us for a new story next week on Long Story Short.